Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
Now, I just want to say before I introduce my next guests that this conversation contains references to sexual abuse and rape, which some listeners may find distressing. So I just want to point that out first. I'm joined by Paula June and Joyce Kavanagh in studio this afternoon. And the three sisters were sexually abused by their father. Kevin Kavanagh was convicted back in 1990 for sexually abusing Paula, June and Joyce Kavanagh. And at 69, he was sentenced to 7 years in prison and went on to serve five. He died back in 1996. And the three sisters who are with me today have now released an audiobook in an effort to try and help others who are perhaps going through or have gone through something similar. June, you might bring us back, first of all, to your earliest childhood memories and just tell me what it was like growing up in the household.
He was a very aggressive man, our father. He was very volatile. So daily life without any abuse occurring was difficult. So, it seems like a million years ago, but it was a difficult childhood, but it was our norm. So it was perfectly normal to be sexually abused and then go out and continue a game, pick up from where you left off, out on the street with other children.
What's your earliest memories, Paula?
See, I believe from the day I was born, I was abused because I was groomed right from the get-go. But my earliest memory of being raped, I think I would have been about 4, 5 maybe. That would probably be the clearest earliest memory I have. So you have to find a way to be able to manage a situation where you can't run from. So what you do is you disassociate. And then what we've all found, especially through publishing the books and writing the books, and especially for me, the clearest picture I would have got was doing the audiobook, was understanding that what I did to survive as a child, that disassociation, actually was what killed me for the rest of my life, because I was so disassociated without consciously knowing it. It meant I actually never engaged in anything fully in my life. I never had a real relationship. I never had an interaction that I wasn't half removed from, but I didn't know it because it was then part of my makeup.
It was only in later life, yeah, Paula, that you realised that.
Yeah.
And what about you, Joyce? What are your memories?
It's you have to remember the culture we grew up in. There was an awful lot of poverty. We did live in a poverty area, but that...
You grew up in Dublin, isn't that right?
In Ballyfermot.
Yeah. And what era are we talking about?
Well, 50s.
Do we have to
60s.
Tell you?
The 50s, the 60s. Yeah. But the culture at the time was people helped each other in a community, but no one spoke about anything that happened in the home. Mm. And that was to do with the shame because they hadn't got much and all of this crap. So that was a norm. So the abuse and not being able to talk about it, not that you would, because you wouldn't know how to say it. What would you actually say? You didn't understand what was happening.
He was sentenced to 7 years in prison back in 1990, but later went on to serve five. Is that correct?
Yeah.
But is that he passed away in prison? Is that right?
No. A year after he was released, he died.
He died.
Stroke.
Okay, so he had been released and then he died in 1996.
Yeah. It's part of a sentence. When it doesn't matter how long you get some off for... We were told it was good behaviour.
So when you heard that he had been convicted and was sentenced to 7 years, do you remember that day in court?
It's the best day of our lives.
Yeah. What age were you then, Joyce?
What age was I then?
I was 25, if that helps.
So you were in your kind of mid-20s,
32.
early 30s when he was convicted, And what are your memories of that day, Paula?
I was absolutely delighted. I didn't care if he got a day. I wasn't thinking of the length or the duration of the sentence. I didn't think he was going to get sent away at all. Because prior to going into the courtroom that day, we met with our barrister for the first time and he told us he was going to walk free because of his age, because he had pled guilty. And the judge that was overseeing the case, he said he's going to walk free, but don't think he's getting away with anything. And I'm going, of course he's getting away with something. He's going to walk out here free. And all my concern was that he would come back into the family home because I was still living in the family home. So when he got sentenced that day, I thought, hallelujah. I still didn't believe it. It took a while for it to sink in. Mm. But, oh yeah, I was delighted. June was the only one who wasn't.
I wasn't delighted. Happy at all because I always had a sense of the enormity of the impacts on me. Even though I didn't understand it, I knew it was huge and I knew it was defining me. But yet I knew that sentence was crap. I just felt there's no way does that justify what he's done.
Well, the abuse lasted roughly how long?
With different, with all of us, and we were all ashamed to say that it went on as long as it did.
Mm. But say just for
I was nearly 18 before it stopped.
He always spoke about it like, so don't tell him what we're doing. So you did feel part of it. You did feel you were doing something wrong and you would never admit or talk about it because of the shame. You felt you had done something. And it took years to get that.
And also, and it happens in all homes where there's abuse. Each of us were convinced that we were the only one it was happening to.
Mm. That disassociation Paula was talking about, you do it throughout the rest of your life then because your survival mode from there on in.
So when he was released from prison, where did he go then?
He ended up in a flat on his own.
Yeah.
He wasn't back in the family home.
No.
No.
Oh no.
And how did you feel, Joyce, when you heard that he'd passed away in 96?
It was 2 days before we heard the news. I don't know how that happened.
I think because they were split up, my mother was only informed 2 days after he died.
When we heard about it, we had a strange reaction.
Yeah, myself and June.
Yeah, I just pulled up outside Joyce's house one day and she came out to the car and she said, "Dad's dead." And the shock of it just hit me like a slap in the face. And the two of us just burst into tears. But it was about 2 seconds. Mm. And the two of us just took a breath, looked at each other and realised that's a reaction, an automatic reaction. Mm. It's not real. And then the two of us just start laughing and walked into the house. And it was the strangest feeling. Paula, how did you feel?
I didn't feel like you did. You would have imagined, because I had a particularly difficult relationship with him, that if anybody would have been jumping for joy when he died, it would have been me. But actually, I was horrified that these two wouldn't go to his funeral, that they were laughing about the fact he died. I'm telling you, I was in shock that that's how they felt. I resented that they wouldn't go. But the day I turned up to his funeral, I remember sitting there and only with hindsight looking back, I was sitting there. I wanted him to know I was the one sitting there, not them two, that he loved.
So she was still
that was me. I wanted him to know that he should have loved me all the time. There was nothing wrong with me.
I suppose it just shows you how people deal with things so differently.
Yeah,
isn't
oh,
it?
You know,
people
it's ridiculous.
In totally different ways. You've mentioned counselling and
years and years.
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah,
but to be perfectly honest, it was all a good foundation. None of it was wasted, and it's all necessary.
It's helped.
There's absolutely no way you can get through it on your own, and we wouldn't have had each other because of that. Disassociation and compartmentalisation of all of our issues. We weren't really there for each other. We weren't even there for ourselves. So it was only over time and through years of therapy that we began to come together. And that's when we decided to write our first book. Now, and we didn't do that for anybody else. We did that for ourselves to heal.
The first book was Purging. The second book was because people asked us, how did you get from A to B? Yeah. How did you get over your abuse? Yeah. And at the time, I would have told you I was over the abuse. I actually wasn't, but I thought I was. I fooled myself into thinking I was. But the audiobook, this book here, the audiobook for me was where the healing actually took place. Because speaking about your abuse is much more powerful than writing it.
Than writing it, yeah. So effectively, the audiobook is kind of the third book, really, isn't
it? Yeah,
it is.
Yes.
Really, yeah.
And it's up to date. And it contains lots of interaction with each other. We're having great conversations and we're also enacting past situations. So we have family and friends all on board.
24.
Who have brought their voices and added it to it to make it come to life.
And who are you hoping will listen to this?
Well, anybody that has anything to do with victims, victims themselves, of course, first and foremost, but anybody that's working with people. In fact, we would go further than that to say that any trauma, any childhood trauma
has the same psychological impacts, because you do have to deal with the impact the physical act yeah. had on you. It's nearly the easiest thing to get out of the way, because it's not until you get that out of the way that you realise you've been damaged on a much deeper level.
So if anybody listening today wants to download or listen to the audiobook, Paula, where can they do that?
On Spotify.
And what's it called?
The Grip of Childhood Sexual Abuse.
The Grip of Childhood Sexual Abuse
yeah.
by Paula, June and Joyce Kavanagh.
Yeah.
And you can download that and listen to it on Spotify. Spotify. Yeah.
And it's a mix between an audiobook, a play,
yeah, it's a bit like a play.
And a podcast all right, in one. And what we wanted to do was make it easy for people to hear and to understand why. Like one of the real important messages for us is to explain to people the importance of why you go back and look at your abuse. Because a lot of people have said to us over the years, like, Jesus Christ, would you not leave it where it is and like, get on with your life and move on? You can't move
sure
on
can't,
if
yeah.
you don't know what's running in the back of your mind that's controlling your behaviour.
And like, here we are in 2025, still trying to figure out what to do about this crime. Now, we've several key messages in the book that we really need highlighted.
Mm.
And one of them would be the inclusion of perpetrators in some kind of therapy. You know, that shouldn't be voluntary. Like, we have to address the problem. They're the problem.
Yeah, statutory, some kind yeah. of statutory, you know, sexual offenders program, really, that, yeah, that, yeah. that you'd have to engage with. Just on a final point, how did you find the podcasting, the audiobook, was it?
Loved it.
An enjoyable experience?
Loved it, but it was really hard.
Yeah.
It was hard. It was like challenging.
We didn't expect, because we have done the two books prior to, we didn't expect at this stage to still be learning and discovering things about ourselves. And that always amazes me. It doesn't matter how old you are, because we keep thinking, you know, we're here now, we're grand. And we are 99% of the time. But even doing and talking, something hits you like you didn't realise.
Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you all and chat to you today for such a difficult, hard, complex experience that the three of you have gone through. It's remarkable how you're able to talk about it in, you know, in such a pragmatic way, you know.
There is hope.
Unless we can talk about it and people can talk about it, including non-victims, which I don't
think. I think it's a fascinating insight, you know, into what happened in Ireland and what has still happened and still happening in some cases. And I think
it's complex crime, though, and complex impacts on a human being, that we're all in our 60s now. And although it's not defining us any longer, we certainly have put a lot of the pain to the past. But we are still uncovering ways that our lives have been altered as a result of it.
So for anybody who wants to download the podcast, you can do so on Spotify. It's a pleasure to meet you all, and thanks a million for joining us here on Lunchtime Live today.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Paula, June, Joyce Kavanagh, thanks so much for your time. For anybody listening that wants to contact the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, I just want to mention that their free phone 24-hour national helpline number anytime, day or night, is 1800 77 8888. That's 1800 77 8888. We'll be back in a few moments.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.